Welcome to The Grow Show, powered by Steel. The Grow Show is brought to you by Marty Grinder's Grow Group, where we specialize in teaching landscaping companies how to clarify their platform, grow their people, build their processes, and realize profits. Everything we teach is grounded in real experience. Our team is actively involved in the day-to-day operations of Southwest Ohio's Grinder Landscaping Company. New episodes of The Grow Show are released weekly on Wednesdays. Remember to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Now, here's your host, Marty Grinder.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever the case may be. This is Marty Grinder from The Grow Group and Grinder Landscaping Company. Thanks for downloading The Grow Show powered by Steel. This week, we have my longtime client and friend, Jared Henson from Earth, Turf, and Wood in Denver, Pennsylvania, an incredible company. You're going to really love this episode, folks. But first, a reminder, you can get the latest edition of The Grow Show delivered to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts or watch us on YouTube for an enhanced learning experience. The Grow Show is the greatest thing since women's college soccer. That's going to be starting up soon here, folks. My daughter played soccer at Auburn University, War Eagle, and I loved every minute of that. I traveled all over the United States to watch her team play. And consequently, I am a big Auburn fan, and I love women's soccer. My girls played that. That was their sport. Jared's daughter plays at Messiah College in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, so I know he's a fan. I love seeing young women and mature women excel in all walks of life. Now that my daughters are married and I have two granddaughters, you can bet they will have a soccer ball at their foot and a golf club in their hand. Ha! Now on to this week's edition of The Grow Show. Jared, welcome.
Great, Marty. It's an honor to be on here with you. We go way back.
And we do go way back. It's awesome to have you on here too. You are someone who I characterize, Jared, as being very serious about your business. You and I have a lot in common. You don't miss a thing. You have a very dry sense of humor. I have that at times too. My wife often tells me people don't know you're joking. You got to be careful with that. The passion that you have for all aspects of your life, your business, your family, it's amazing. I've told you this, it oozes from you whenever I talk to you. I can't wait for you to share our wisdom with our listeners, but let's start with a little background.
Sure.
When I was preparing for this, I don't even remember how we met, to be honest with you. Can you tell me how we met?
Because
I don't remember.
So
do we want to have this be live or do we want to edit this out?
No, we can have it be live. That's fine.
Okay. All right.
So
go ahead.
I had become good friends with Chris DeSabatino from DeSabatino Landscaping. And him and I went to the GIE show 1 year, and that's where he introduced me to you, and we had dinner there in Louisville.
Okay, now I remember that.
It goes way back to that.
Yes.
So that was the beginning of really me opening up and searching for answers from other smart people in the industry to get to where we are today.
So that, now I recall that. And I know you're in our peer groups today. What was your first experience with the Grow Group beyond just seeing me speak in Louisville?
I mean,
was it a field trip? Was it Grow? Was it the peer group? It had to be a field trip or something.
I think it was a field trip at your place. I think shortly after that, we went on a field trip to Grinder.
Yeah, because I think you were the first person to ever fly in privately to one of our events because you had a small plane that you came in on. And I was just like, wow, that's pretty cool.
That's back when you were mowing grass, Marty. You had to stop middle of the day and come over and meet with us. So
I know, and come over and pick you up. Exactly. So we're joking, kind of.
Yeah.
All right. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I know family is very important to you. Tell us about your family, please.
So we have three children. Christy and I have been married 25 years.
Congratulations.
We met at Messiah, where we both are alum there. And so our youngest is Trey. He's 14. And our girls are now 19 and 21. So
wow.
It happened real fast. So that's our family, and family time does mean a lot to me, and it always has. And I've told a lot of peers in the industry that, you know, in the world of small business, if you let it run you, it will run you.
Yeah, you're right.
And you've got to learn to say no to some things because before you blink, all of a sudden your kids are grown up and you've missed that time. So,
and I did a pretty good job at this, but you know, my great aunt, she passed away in 1986 when I was 18 years old, but I still can hear her talking to me, Jared. And she would say, hindsight is good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Hindsight is good stuff. And you're younger than I am. And, you know, I recently, I think I texted you and you said, I'll call you back on Monday. I'm out in Phoenix with Trey at a NASCAR race. Yeah. I know I have called you in other times where you've been someplace with your kids or your family.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the one-on-one time that you spend with your kids and the significance of that.
I mean, you can't get that time back. And, you know, as kids enter that age of 10 and above, I still remember to this day when we were all at Aileron and you drew that upside down bell curve, you know, and you said, look, the kids get dumber when they get to somewhere around 14 or 13. And then eventually they get smarter. And you had shown Emily and Lindsay and you said, we're down here at the bottom of the bell curve right now, but we're heading in the right direction.
Right.
And I think those years are so critical to be able to spend with your kids and do fun stuff and go places. And, you know, I've always said I date my daughters. You got to go out to lunch or dinner with your daughters.
Right.
And just hear about life and how they interact. And because it's just so critical in those ages.
Where did you learn that? Was that something your parents did? Was that something you learned in a men's group? Was that just you or what?
Just listening to different podcasts and learning that time is just so critical, and watching the mistakes made by other people that were older than me that didn't do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
and I saw that too. They would tell me, you know, the late great Clay Mattil, his book's behind me back here. And he would often tell me a couple things. He'd say, Marty, success is applause at home. Mm-hmm. And then he'd say, you know, at your funeral, they're not going to say that, you know, Marty wished he would have spent less time with his family.
Yeah.
And that always just, you know, it's easy to get caught up in work and the sense of responsibility that we have to make the business work, to take care of our family. But at the same time, you got to take care of the family. And I admire how you make them a very important client on your calendar.
It's not an easy thing, Marty.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of segues into the business. And, you know, when we started the business in 2000, we got a small loan from a bank. We decided that if we're going to do this, we're going to do it on our own. We're not going to borrow money from family or friends. And we bought the first truck. And by year five or six, like most startup small business owners, I found myself working 70, 80 hours a week.
Yes.
And I hated this. I'm like, this isn't what I signed up for.
Yeah. Why did you hate it?
Because I wasn't able to spend the time with the kids and the family. I wasn't able to be home. And I found myself working on estimates at 7, 8 o'clock at night. And,
right.
You know, it was a real wake up call. And I had to decide, look, at that point, I had to either decide to scale it up and hire people that know more than I do, like get out of their way, or go back.
Go back. Right. Exactly. So that's the only two solutions.
You can't stay at that point.
Yeah.
And I think it was somewhere around that time period that I remember in one of your early peer groups where, and see if you remember this, you remember the video from Seth Godin, The Difference Between Managers and Leadership.
Yeah.
And he talks in there about managers figure out what they want done and get people to do it. Managers try and do what they did yesterday a little faster, a little cheaper, with a few less defects. And I was essentially being a manager. I wasn't being a leader.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, he talks in there about what's not happening is leadership, and leadership is about finding the right people, agreeing on where you want to go and creating a powerful vision and getting out of the way. And that's really hard for people that have self-identified themselves as small business people because they are afraid of getting bigger.
Yeah, right. Well, and I've seen so much maturation from you as a business owner. It's amazing. It's been a big credit to your success. The business has really morphed into something special. And we're, for those of you that are watching us on the YouTube version, we've got pictures of Jared's, you know, how he got started and his facility and his brand new facility that he just built. You've evolved. I think when you started, you were, you know, mowing and maintenance like a lot of us are.
We got into grounds care early on.
Yeah.
And then
it evolved into much more. Talk to us about the journey. And what I really want to know about this is, because as we show pictures of these jobs, incredible projects that you put in, that when you started 20 years ago, you know a lot more about construction than I do. You're pretty smart. You've picked up on it. You have a passion for it. You know how to use a laser level. You have a lot of construction knowledge. I think you know that. But what is the, as we have this discussion, please share with us the reason that people do business with ET&W. Mm-hmm. What is your competitive advantage? And you know what competitive advantage is. Competitive advantage is the reason consumers do business with you over all other options in the marketplace. Why did they pick ETW? Let's just make sure we touch on that. But talk about your evolution.
So, you know, we started in 2000 and got into commercial ground scare and kind of were all over the place. And it wasn't until 2007 that I met with a friend that had a high-end cabinetry business. And I decided we wanted to rebrand ourselves and kind of go after the high-end residential design build market.
Okay.
And he said, look, that's a glass ceiling you have to break through. And that takes some time. You know, you've got to build your credibility in that. You have to produce projects that define that. And I remember one time when we got, when we first landed our first $75,000 backyard project, and I called him, I said, we're there. He's like, you're not there. He's like, when it's got six digits attached to it, or maybe even two commas, then we'll start talking about the fact that you're there. And
wow. Great mentor, actually.
Yeah, he was. And so we began to do that. And it was right around the year 2007 that I was introduced to you and the peer groups, and I realized that this thing that I covet in my hands, that I think I know all the answers to, really isn't going to get me to where I want to go. It's about exposing yourself to people that will help you get to where you need to go in life.
Oh, that's so well said. And, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, Jared, you probably do. You're very smart. The peer groups did the same thing for me. I just wasn't able to vocalize all that to you. All that teaching and meetings and all those peer group meetings I've done, I added it up a couple of years ago. I have visited over 200 landscaping companies in the last 30 years. Yeah. I've learned something from every single one.
Everyone.
Now, some of them were things that I should not do, but I'll tell you the thing that's been most impactful, and you and I have talked about this. You go on a peer group meeting and you see the behavior of the owner or somebody on the team, and you look and you're like, well, that's terrible. And then you start thinking and you're like, well, wait a second. I do that. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I have got to wake up. I can't be treating people like that, or, you know, and that's the big takeaways, like your aha you talked about.
Yeah. And so once I began to do that and we rebranded ourselves and we just decided to stay hyper-focused on what we do and do really, really well. And we kept refining that process and that procedure time and time again and learning to say no.
Okay, so that's a great segue here. Yeah. Who's your ideal client?
Yep.
And have there been times when you strayed away from that ideal client? Did it bite you in the butt?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So
talk to us.
Our ideal client is that small business owner or business executive that is busy in life, that wants the project done correctly in the backyard, that realizes the value for the dollar spent, and they don't want to have to be around to micromanage it. They just want to trust the company to do it and do it right. And I love Brett Ochtenhagen's comment that he made with you on the show. He said, we're the highest priced company in our market. I can't sell to people that don't care about landscaping. And that's so true.
I thought that was so good what he said. Yeah, he dropped a lot of bombs on that one.
Brett's in my peer group, and he is one smart dude. And that is so true. And we continue to refine that process. And we go back into, I think that was one of the big turning points, is we refined our sales process.
Okay.
Okay. And we started charging modest design fees. Okay. And you and I have talked about this at length. This industry is not great.
No.
Of charging for design fees that give away valuable information.
Right.
And we just said, we're going to put a stake in that ground.
Right.
And we're only going to spend so much time on this project until we ask for a pre-construction retainer. Because if they weren't going to give us the construction retainer, they probably weren't going to go with this.
Exactly. And I've learned that from you. I think you've actually helped us a lot. And you talk a lot to your team about having confidence, because you make a new hire. They come over from a company that didn't have the process you did, and they're afraid to ask for the price. I just want to digress here for a moment. Our ice machine was on the fritz.
Sure.
So I Googled, I can't even pronounce the name. It's Manitowoc or something like that, ice machine. So I Googled the name to try to find a repair company. I find one that they were paying to have searched. They're a Manitowoc, however you say it, certified. So I'm like, okay, they can come out. They come out. They were here about an hour and a half. They did do a great job. They fixed everything. They cleaned it. There were two guys there, and it was $600, and they were here an hour and a half. I don't know anything about the ice machine. We needed it. I didn't know what buttons to push. I didn't know anything. I mean, for all I know, I could have looked at it and said, the thing's broken. Go get a new one. Yep. And a new one's like $6,000 or $7,000. Yep. So you pay for the expertise. We don't have a problem in general paying a plumber, an electrician,
correct,
your doctor, but then we don't, I think a lot of landscapers don't, they don't hold themselves in high enough regard to ask the price, and you do that.
Correct. And then, you know, we talk about, and we're all guilty as this, as landscape business owners and landscape companies, we deviate from that process. Okay.
Yes.
And then we deviate from it. The process for which we created in our company, because we had a situation, so we developed that process, and then we deviate from it, and then we find ourselves back in the team room again having a conversation about how we got to where we are.
Guilty.
Right? I am too.
Yeah. Okay?
And on the wall in my conference room, where we have our team meetings every week, is a quote that I hung on the wall from Messiah University's head soccer coach. All right? They've won 6 national titles. Scott Fry, I stole this quote from him, and it says, "You can't cheat the process."
Yeah.
Okay. Because every time you cheat that process, you find yourself back in that conversation about how we got here.
Right.
Okay.
That's so well said.
Like, I'm at a point where I would charge my own mom a design fee to come out and design the backyard because I don't want to waste my team's time chasing a squirrel that's not going to go somewhere.
Yeah. And that's funny because I say the same thing. Like, listen, John is my friend. He was in my wedding. But there's no special deals or anything. If this is business, I already told him that. This is how it works. And that's the stuff. I think what you're speaking to, Jared, is wisdom. And wisdom doesn't necessarily come along with how old you are. It comes along with your experience and how long you've been doing something and the trials and tribulations. And do you adjust and learn from mistakes? The only thing that burns me up when we make a mistake here is when no one slows down to try to analyze it, do some post-mortem analysis, and keep that same thing that we just blew up from happening again. And I know you're the same way. Let's morph over to a big part of your company. You talk about systems. You talk about the image and everything is this glorious building that you built. Talk to us a little bit. We're showing some pictures of it now. Tell us a little bit about the facility and the biggest lesson you learned. Like, why did you do that?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the nuance.
I said early on, it's either going to be the smartest or stupidest thing I've ever done in my life.
When I saw the plans for it, I said, oh my gosh, where's the defibrillator?
Right. But
then I also said to Vince, I said, I'm not doubting that guy. He'll figure it out.
So let's back up a little bit, you know, maybe a couple of years before we built the building, right? And so the same mentor that helped me rebrand the company in 2007, I asked him to come over because I said to him, I want a new building. And he says, all right, look, I'll come over. I'll sit in your conference room. We'll talk. And him and his wife came and they sat with Christy and I. And he asked me some select questions. She's like, all right. He's like, how many people do you have in each office here? And we were in a 2,400 square foot facility.
I remember
been there.
Yep.
And I said, oh, one. He's like, well, how many job trailers do you have out back, like with employees in? I said, none. He said, well, how many trucks are you parking outside? I said, well, none, because they're all parked inside. He's like, you don't need a new building. You want a new building. You don't need a new building.
Right.
And let me tell you, when he left, I was irritated with that. I was like, who the heck does he think he is telling me I don't need a new building?
Yeah.
And so if I fast forward 4 years, I called him back and I said, can you come and meet with me again? Because we had grown the company since then. And wouldn't you know it, he asked me the same stupid questions again, only now I had different answers.
Okay.
And he said, all right, now build the building. And so we began.
What great advice.
Yeah, we began because it, you know, I'm telling you, that's what networking with other business owners does.
Yeah.
You're going to hear stuff you don't want to hear.
Right.
But there's validity to it.
Right.
And so we began the design process of this thing on the parcel of land that we had bought next door many, many years ago. And my original plans were like 12,000 square feet. And I thought, this thing is big, man. I don't, you know, whatever. And then I began to share the plans with my peer group. Okay. And they're moving walls and they're widening hallways and they're adding bays. And they're like, where's your future offices and all this stuff? And I'm going to tell you right now, and I'm going to speak to everybody. If you ever think you're going to build a building for your landscape company and you don't have five other landscape business owners look at those plans and modify them, you are out of your mind. Because I had the privilege of having other landscape companies look at this and modify it. And this crazy thing ended up at 20,000 square feet.
Yep.
Okay. And we built it, and darn if they weren't right on every single one of their changes, because we're getting ready to add three new offices. And guess what? I got the space.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Okay. You're there.
So it is what it is. It rebranded us entirely because our model didn't fit the old building, and now it does. And I remember the first time I gave a client a tour of the new facility, and we walked out into the wash bay, and he stopped me and he's like, "You know why we picked you for the project?" And I said, "Why?" And he says, "Because I know the level of detail that went into this building is going to go into my backyard."
Yes,
and I'm investing in that type of company.
Right, exactly. And I've seen your job sites. That's
so
true.
Your brand has to go resonate through your company from top to bottom, from all your employees, right on through your equipment to the final result on the job sites.
So, did the amount of money you put into that, did that make you and Christy nervous?
Oh, like, yeah.
Okay.
It did.
Yeah.
You know, we broke ground the day the governor shut the state down with COVID.
Yeah.
I'm like, hooray. Okay. So here I am, a leader out there.
I think
there
you called me that day.
You know, you try not to get emotional in front of your team, but they're all looking at you like, are you really? You know, this is a good idea. And I'm like, go with me on this. And, you know, we chose a builder, and I could have, with our construction skills, probably project manage some of this stuff. However, you and I both know what it's like when a customer says, "I want to use my electrician," or "I want to use my plumber on the job."
It's a disaster.
And it's a disaster. So I said, look, I'm going to be the customer for the first time, and I'm not going to do this.
Yeah, that's
smart. And so I went to the GC, and I said to him, look, here's a couple of my people that I would like to use. You get a number. If they're not close, we're not using them. You're managing the entire thing. And so we did that, and we ended up moving in at 3.15% interest.
Yeah.
We were at the bottom. We were at the bottom of the interest curve on that thing. Bank allowed us to borrow so much. I was so freaking frugal with this thing that we left $700,000 on the table that we didn't borrow at 3.15%. I could kick myself all day long on that one.
Yeah.
But I was just protecting the company.
Yeah, right.
And I don't have any regrets for doing what we did today. I look back on it, and I'm like, this was the perfect
thing. That's terrific. We're gonna do a field trip or some kind of an event there in the future. And I'm sure after people seeing all this, the last point I want to make, I do a lot of commercial work now. You do almost 100% residential. I know you do some.
We have a couple commercial clients, private commercial clients.
Right. But you bring clients there. That's part of the shift.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just briefly tell us about that.
Yeah. So the criteria is the initial appointment is it has to be both spouses or both decision makers here at the office between 8 and 4 Monday through Friday.
Right. Okay. And you get them to do that.
Yeah. We get them to do that because we know that when they come here, all of a sudden it's like, all right, these guys know what they're doing.
Yeah. Right. There's things that are communicated by how organized it is, how nice it is, the design pictures, the other things, all the details. It communicates a ton that you can't say in a video, a PDF, or a meeting at a kitchen counter.
And we have learned long and hard, both spouses have to be at that initial point.
I applaud you. We haven't been able to get that done, but that is a great
process.
I'm telling
you, and don't give me, I'm the only decision maker. Because if I went out and spent $200,000 in my backyard without my wife knowing about it,
I'd be dead.
I would be in counseling.
Yeah, okay, exactly. I might be in worse
counseling. So don't give me that because you both need to be there. Now, look, when we get the material selection, if one or two of them want to do that, I don't really care at that point.
Yeah, but you want buy-in from both of them.
That's it. And you can, I know that there's landscapers that go out and they visit customers, you know, and they run out back with the spray paint can and stuff like that. Somebody said to me once, and I forget who it was in the peer group, they said, "I will win a job any day of the week if I go to the kitchen table versus going into the backyard." Because I need to get to know the client.
Yeah.
And I need to get to know their wishes and stuff like that. Run to the backyard, I'll beat you any day of the week.
Processes are a big part of your success and your journey.
Yeah.
Tell us, if you were going to start over today, what would be the first two SOPs, standard operating procedures, processes you would build in the company? Because we've talked a lot about this, and I know that's been a focus of yours in the peer group with your peer group accountability partner. Talk a little bit about that.
I mean, when we revise that sales process, and we've got some tools that help get the customer, help extract the budget number out of the customer before we go to design, we've worked really, really hard on that. And we fill that number in, their budget number in on the design agreement, because ironically, they forget what they tell you their budget was. But we then we can pull the design agreement back out. And I learned this from you, is always setting that next appointment before you leave the first one.
Right, exactly. Okay? So critical.
And so I think that's been one of the biggest processes that we've gone
through. That's a good one for everyone to take heed upon.
Don't ever leave that appointment without setting the next one.
Right.
Work to it. Don't say, well, I can hear the team downstairs. Well, I have to do this research and I have to call the townships and I have to set the next appointment. If we have to move it, we'll move it, but set the next appointment.
But it'd be a lot better to have something there. And also that keeps them from wondering and calling somebody else. Again, these are a series of promises you're making to them and you're delivering to when you go to ask for the deposit and the signature. There's some rapport that's been developed. That's what I see happens from that.
Absolutely. And sometimes if it's a time critical job, we'll set the next two or three appointments.
Is there a process that you're using to hand off the job from sales to production that might be worth sharing?
If we go back and look at the production packets from like 10 years ago, it's a godforsaken miracle we got to where we are today.
I do remember those. Right? They were in like a plastic folder and stuff.
You go back and look at a form from like 2005 and you're like, I don't know how in the world we ever met.
I do the same thing. I mean, I think back to stuff I was doing when I was in my 40s, and I'm like, why did anyone put up with my nonsense?
I know.
I thought I was a process guy. I didn't know what the heck I was doing.
Right. So we have production packets that we go over with our, we call them project managers. Some people call them foremen, but we pull the foreman in before the job, it goes to final contract, to have them look over the job before we go to contract. And we will meet with the foreman to go over the whole project. And here's the other big thing. If that job goes over hours, in the field, it triggers a mandatory post-construction meeting with the foreman, the estimator, the production manager, and the architect. Because we want to find out, was it a one-off error, or is it something that needs to be modified in a production case so that doesn't happen?
Right.
We're very diligent with that process.
Well, and that's how you make money. There's a lot at stake here in making those adjustments and learning from them, but you not making the adjustments, having the team lead the process. Yeah. I think that's what I see from you, because when I first met you, it was you leading everything. And that, you can't scale Jared. You can scale a system and a team, but you can't scale one person.
You can. And if you have the processes and the procedures in place, the team will follow them.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Okay, for the most part, every now and then. Yeah.
It reminds me of a conversation a manager that I had here once said one of his direct reports was complaining that people were doing this and doing that. And I overheard him say, he said, okay, I have news for you. People are not coming in here and intentionally trying to piss you off.
Correct.
Okay. They are doing the best they can. Maybe the process isn't clear enough then. What are we doing? What do we need to do? And I think, your maturation as a leader, you've gone through it. We're still growing and getting better. But I still think the all-time best management tip I have to share, leadership tip, is look and say to yourself, what am I doing or not doing that's getting me the results I don't want? It's got to start with you, because if it doesn't and you're walking around looking for someone to blame, it's not productive. You're not going to get better. Correct. You and I both have learned that, haven't we?
Yes. Yep, absolutely. I mean, it's a journey, Marty. We're never going to get to the point where we wake up one morning like, well, we've got it all figured out.
Yeah, no, I know.
Right?
I'm recording this 2 days after getting back on vacation. I was in here early this morning. It's Wednesdays. So one of the changes we've made is on Wednesdays, everybody in the company is required to be at the safety meeting, because we've had a couple, not big safety things, but we just feel like everybody's got to be in it. So I was there this morning and I was really pleased, Jared, and you know I'm a picky guy. I was really pleased with what I saw. I was pleased with the shop, the grounds, the trucks, what men and women were doing in the morning getting ready. Their shirts were tucked in. There was a very healthy discussion on the safety topic this morning, which was utility locators. It just makes me realize that I never would have been able to get to this point. You know, 25 years ago, it was me doing all that stuff. And we learn. And
I'm, but the you know, team owns it, right?
Yes. Yeah.
They're owning it at this point.
It sounds sappy, but I'm so proud of you and what you've done and how you've changed. And really, and you changing and all the people that we work with here at the Grow Group have helped me change because there's a spotlight on me. I got to be great at what I'm telling you folks to be good at. I mean, that's another tenet of leadership.
But they take pride in what they do.
Yes.
You know, and they enjoy what they do and they feel rewarded for what they do. I mean, you know that we wash our trucks every day before they go out.
Yeah.
And they're immaculate.
I want to repeat that. They wash their trucks every day before they go out.
I mean, we have a wash bay that's 92 feet long by 28 feet wide. We could put three freight liners in there. It takes us 8 minutes to wash a truck. That was a necessity for the new building. But with that being said, on the very rare occasion where I would come down here on a weekend and borrow one of my own trucks, I'm scared to death that I'm going to bring that thing back and put it in the right way that it was when I left.
Right, which is
because
good.
It's so clean inside and outside. And you taught me that. You want to know how a contractor is going to take care of your backyard, you take a look inside your truck. And that has always resonated with me.
Let's move on to something else that is, it's something that we constantly have to work on. And it's an element of every successful company I've been involved with. And it's this concept of internal and external communication. It's been a key to your success.
Yeah.
We hand out an award at the ACE Summit, which is ACE Connect. It's going to be in Park City, Utah. And I'm pretty sure you and Christy are going to join
just
us.
Just booked the plane ticket.
Yep. So Lisa and I will be there. If you folks are interested in our peer groups, we have ACE Discovery. You're going to want to look at that. Last year, you got a great award.
My Vince Award. I have it sitting here in my office.
Oh, well, yeah. Pull it up.
Vince is
waving the camera here. Yeah. See? It's the Vince Award. Yeah. Right.
Vince is right here. See?
Look Vince at that.
Right here. Yeah.
Handsome young man.
He can join in on the meeting. He loves
it. Hard to believe Vince has been running with me for 15 years.
I remember Vince when he was a teenager, practically.
I know. It's crazy.
When he appeared at the first meeting, I'm like, all right, Marty, really? I mean, this guy, he's about as green as green.
And he would go to Starbucks and get me an iced tea.
Yeah. Yeah. Good old Vince.
And now he's an attorney and he's a wonderful guy, as you well know. What is ETW's philosophy on client communication? How do you keep clients aware of where they are in the process, whether it's sales, installation? Yep. Talk to us a little bit about that.
So I got a couple examples. So, I mean, obviously, you know that we have the 5-10 rule here in the office.
Right.
And so that's simple. If an email, call, or anything comes in, a text, you know, after 5, it has to be returned by 10 a.m. the next day. And after 10, it has to be by 5. Even if we don't know the answer, okay, let's just say we're going to get back to them and say we're working on it. Okay. And we'll get back to you by. Okay. So just acknowledge the fact that we have gotten that email. The other big one, and I talked some last year at ACE Connect about this, is for years, our foremen, or we call them project managers, they leave that site on that Friday afternoon. Okay. And the customers come home on the weekend and they're like mice. They go into the backyard and they look at this, they look at that, and they develop all these questions. And then they get that gunshot email sometime Sunday afternoon about, well, this isn't right. And when's this going to be done? And why? Because we're not communicating, right? And so what we finally decided to do was, let's get ahead of this thing. So on Friday afternoon, before our project manager and his crew leave the job site, the project manager goes in the truck and he types up an email to the client. This is what we got done this week. This is what we're going to do next week. And here's some things that you can do for us. Because the clients always want to do something. It could be the smallest thing, like, can you wind up the garden hose for us by Monday morning? Okay.
Yeah.
That simple act of communication 100% eliminated those emails on the weekends.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah. It's done. And the client loved the communication.
It's an easy thing to do, but the hard part is being diligent and keeping it on the calendar and continuing to do it to where it becomes a habit.
Yep. Well, it's part of the evaluation process of the project manager. So if they don't do it, then it's a point on.
And then are you CC'd on those emails?
Yeah, I'm carbon copied on all of them.
Okay, cool.
And so the reason why we do that is because customers every now and then can play games with communication with internal. So we all know where we're all at on the same page.
I got it.
Okay.
And your team, is that hard to get a new project manager or project operations specialist? I forget what you call them.
Project manager.
Is it hard? Project manager. Is it hard to get them to do that, the new ones?
No, because whatever we allow, we encourage. So
yeah,
it's no different than the trucks being washed every day.
Yeah, I get it.
Okay. So yep. It's a mandate. You know, we try and have two CDL drivers on each of the crews. So the project manager doesn't have to drive on the way home. So he can compose the email if he wants to. And it doesn't have to be long. And with AI today, we can almost get to the point where we're going to start inserting pictures and some other things in that.
Yeah.
But that's the level of communication that
we
want. And so to this day, believe it or not, there's still landscapers that don't call customers back for 3 or 5 days.
Yeah.
We'll land that job all day long.
It's absolutely insane. 100%.
Right? We've landed more jobs because we've called people back and communicated right away.
Right.
And you have too. It's a very
thing. For sure. You've been in business 25 years now. Yeah. What's the biggest mistakes you've made in business? If you had to start over again, what would you do? You spend a ton of money to get better. Just talk to us a little bit about, you know, what you do differently and how you're staying sharp going forward.
I think there's a couple things. Number one, a lot of guys start up in business and they estimate with spreadsheets or they estimate with price per square foot on papers or whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
Price per yard of mulch installed. We weren't educated on the term overhead recovery system probably until we were about year 7 or 8. We were losing money when we thought we were making money. And so once we became educated on that, there's a handful of different programs out there that can do that. It was a real wake-up call. Because the first job we estimated out of there, my reaction was, well, that's priced too high. We'll never land that job. Well, okay, you can't afford not to land the job at that price. So, you know, building a budget and building an overhead recovery system, I think that's something you really ought to be focusing on doing in anything more than $250,000 in sales.
Yes.
You really do.
Yes. Right.
That was one of the big aha moments. And I'm going to double back around to this again because it was so incredibly important. And that's the need for peer groups and to rely on people that will take you places that you never thought you could go.
Yeah, right.
You know, on my computer screen, I still have to this day a quote from Lee Buffington. It sits right there. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
And Lee says, look, you spend the first 10 years in business finding your way. The next 10 are spent improving processes. And the last 10, assuming it's a 30-year career, are spent reaping the rewards for what you built.
Yeah, that's all true. Right? That's brilliant. Yeah.
You know, Lee said that to me, and there it is, taped right to the monitor. Okay?
Yep.
Your answer is there. And I said that last year at Ace Connect. It's sitting in that room. You just got to go get it and scan and talk to somebody.
Your remarks there were awesome. They were fantastic.
Well, and if you don't, it's your own darn fault.
Yeah, right. No, you're right. I admire you. You spend the time, and I think time is more valuable than money. You spend the time to get better. You go to the peer group meetings. You've been to our field trips. You come to grow. You're willing to take a call with a fellow peer group member and help them. You send me emails with suggestions, or you have you do your accountability call and you're engaged. I admire what you're doing.
You got to want to get it and you have to rely on the smart people. Like Mary Dresser, our landscape architect, and she's phenomenal at what she does.
She's one of the best. Very talented. Yes.
She's going to retire at the end of this year. So we're looking for her successor. So we got down to the final candidates. And you know what I did? I picked up the phone and called David Cordell, who's in my landscape peer group. And I said, David, would you do the last round of interviews with me? Would you call her and sit down and talk with her on the phone?
Oh my gosh, that's smart.
And he did.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know how much good information? When are you going to have somebody else in the industry that knows what that person should be like, that is willing to spend an hour on the final interview? And he calls me back. He's like, yeah, this is what you want.
Right.
And here's Jared, your flags, here's your green lights.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not trying to be mean and nasty, but I see a lot of rhetoric online about owners of landscaping companies don't want to be in peer groups. They want to do things online. They don't have time for that. AI is going to help. I don't need that. I just think that is such shallow thinking.
It is.
When you get in a room and you're able to do some classroom work, walk to dinner, do some fishing, shoot clays, play golf, sit around a fireplace, talk, relax, bond, get out of your element. There's something magical that goes on when you physically leave your workplace and you go there. I think even in the preparation to go away,
it's
good.
It's huge.
Yes.
We went to Grow last year, and I brought my production manager and my estimator, my two top guys, my leadership team. Okay.
Yep.
It was their first Grow they had been to. And I said to them, I said, listen, when we got out there, I said, look, I love you guys to death. I don't want to see you for the next 48 hours.
That's smart. I didn't know you did that.
Oh, yeah. I said, go find somebody and get together. Go to dinner with somebody else. Learn. It's going to be like drinking out of a
water hose. What did they think of that?
Oh, they loved it. They came back so energized. Matter of fact, on the way back in the truck, they started firing off these suggestions. I'm like, listen, you got to slow the you got to slow the horse down.
We got to turn a recorder on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said, yeah. But I said, it is probably one of the best events. And if you haven't ever been there, my gosh, you really need to go. You just gain so much by just not only in the sessions, but also in just the networking that you do with everybody.
Well, and I often tell people, you know, look, come to Grow. You don't have to join a peer group. Come to Grow. Mm-hmm. Come to one of our field trips. Get a taste for what Marty and his team can do. See the quality of people like Jared that we have that are involved in our peer groups, people that, you know, they're working hard for their families. They're doing the right things. They're, you know, Dr. John Maxwell says, when you do the right things will happen to you. That is just so true. I believe that, you know, I have faith. I believe in God. I do think he watches down more favorably on those that do the right things. Mm-hmm. Now, you may not like me for saying that, but I just think that, and I just think that the way you're going about it, they're treating people well and, you know, taking your team to events like that. I mean, they got job security. They know that. And I think the greatest investment we can make in someone is to train them a new skill.
You got to want it. There was a small guy who's a landscaper about a half hour east of here last year that I got to know a little bit. And I said to him, I said, you're going to go to Grow with us. And he said, really? You know, he's probably 500,000. I said, get in my truck. You're going to Grow with us.
Yeah, I saw that. That was
and
cool.
So he went out there and he sat with us and he got a lot out of that. And the one day I said, we were in the main conference room. I said, go over here and meet Gene. And Gene spent like a half hour with you because Gene's a great guy.
Yeah.
And you know, here's Gene, right?
How many million? This year's Grow. Big Gene. You
right.
can't miss
Big
him.
Gene.
He's bigger than you are.
Right. He's huge. And you know, it's just, he sat there and spent a half hour talking with Gene.
Yeah. He's an awesome guy. I can't wait to share him with everyone in Dallas in February.
Yeah, he is phenomenal.
All right. We're getting close here. What's on the horizon for ETW? I'm going to give you a tough question here. You may not have an answer to it. What's your exit strategy? And if you don't have one, it's okay. I know you're thinking about
it. I am.
And I just wonder, like, what's the plan?
You know, I don't know that I want to work much past early to mid 60s. So what does that mean? That's a 10-year runway right now.
Right.
Trey's 14 years old. You went down this road with Grant.
Yep.
He's going to work somewhere else. I don't know what the future holds, but I know that it's in the back of my mind. And what's it going to look like going forward?
Yep. Yep.
You know, and we went, when we built the new building, before we built the new building, we didn't have any debt. And so I sat down with Christy and I said, you know, I could probably create a pathway right now. And she's like, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. Hang out around the house.
My wife said, like, what are you going to do?
I said, oh, no, I'll figure out something. Just hang out. And she goes, oh, no, you're not going to just hang around the house. You're going to go do something. So I still enjoy it. I love creating these visions, but it is something that's in the back of my mind because we're going to be there sooner than later. And I've had so many mentors that says, this isn't something you can wake up today and decide in the mirror.
Well, and I think, and I know you think this way, but the philosophy is that you're planning an exit strategy because the best run businesses are the ones that can run without the owner. Maybe it means you're not there and Trey is involved in it, or one of your senior people now morphs into a president's position. My son started here on April 8th. He's in the Cincinnati office.
Yeah.
He's doing well. He's got a lot to learn, but he has a ton of potential. He has a ton of passion for it. I don't know what I would do. I'm older than you are, Jared. I have a plan. I at least have a team in place now that I don't have the pressure on me. I get to do wonderful things like the Grow Show powered by Steel.
Yeah.
I have a great life, but I still myself got to be thinking about my exit strategy.
You do. And I've got a couple peers in my peer group that are further along than I am. And I'm watching all these very, very closely.
Yes,
and learn.
Right. Right.
So you got to build the right team first. And right. somebody said to me a while back, he said, if you can't leave and go on a 2-week vacation and not touch your phone, you don't have the right exactly. team in place.
I agree for sure.
I just got back from a 2-week vacation. So that's, you got to build your right team. You got to be willing to give up the responsibility. Nobody's ever going to do it 100% the way you would.
No,
you
right.
know, if we can get it to 90%, that's a win.
Yeah. Heck, I think even 80%
80%.
Good.
I'll take 80.
Yeah.
You know?
So, Jared, you're a good man. I really appreciate you sharing. I appreciate the kind things that you've said about what we've done with you. But you've put the effort.
We wouldn't be where we are, Marty, without the introduction that you gave us to peer groups and helping us along the way. There's no way.
And I appreciate that. You've done the work, though. And that's what's so cool. Because in almost 30 years of teaching, Jared, I was watching one of my videos from when I was in my 20s, and some of it was pretty bad, to be honest with you. But the foundational principles of hustle and treating people well and being clean and organized and a commitment to excellence, I've been teaching that for 30 years. I haven't really, it's not like if you worked with me 30 years ago and you work with me today,
right.
it's different, but it's not like from here to here. It's different. But what I'm getting at is, it's not everybody takes the work and goes and tries to do something with it and make it better. And you've done that.
Well, I think when you walk away from some of these conferences and you feel like, okay, I've got a list of 40 things. I got to pick three.
Yeah. Pick three, right.
Pick three and right. work on it. Okay. And don't go to the next three until you figured out the top three.
Amen.
Because you're going to get so frustrated with, I'm just never going to get there.
Amen.
Okay.
Well, folks, Jared, thank you. Appreciate you sharing. We're going to put your website in the show notes. We're going to put your social media feeds in the show notes. People are going to seek you out at Grow in Dallas, Texas in February. I know that. And I just appreciate you for being you. Say hi to your family. I hope Messiah College wins a national championship.
We're due for a 6th national title. So hopefully.
Yeah. So I hope Skylar has a great season. Yeah. And we're going to see you real soon. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Marty. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you. Okay, folks, that's going to do it for this week's edition of The Grow Show powered by Steel. If you haven't done so already, subscribe to The Grow Show. And if you can, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more success-minded landscape professionals find us. And if you really want to help us, share this episode with your team or any landscape pro you know. Take your phone out right now and send it to them. Do it for me, folks. That would help. Thanks for joining us on The Grow Show this week. We'll see you next week. And last thing, don't forget to sign up for one of our field trips. We've got all the information here in the show notes. You'll be glad you did. All right, everybody. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Grow Show. A special thanks to the folks at Steel, whose support makes this podcast possible and whose outdoor power equipment makes our jobs easier every day. Did you know that you can tour Marty's Landscaping Company? We're hosting 4 Grunder Landscaping Company field trips in 2025. Where landscape pros can come see our operation for themselves in a small group setting. Meet the GLC leadership team, ask Marty your questions in person, and connect with other landscape pros. Space is limited. Visit growgroupinc.com today to sign up.